Hello, this is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service, with reports and analysis from across the world. The latest news 7 days a week. BBC World Service podcasts are supported by advertising.
This is the Global News Podcast from the BBC World Service. Hello, I'm Oliver Conway, and we're recording this at 13 hours GMT on Wednesday, the 22nd of July. Our main stories. The US orders China to close its consulate in Houston, accusing it of stepping up spying operations. Documents are seen burning in the courtyard. We hear about the angry reaction in Beijing. Twitter bans thousands of accounts linked to an extreme right-wing conspiracy theory. And
the first thing you hear are the sharp claws against the metal cage. And then you see a nose.
The hundreds of moon bears stuck in cages in South Korea. Animal rights activists call on the authorities to take action. Also in the podcast,
it matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll.
Andrew Mlangeni, the last of the defendants tried alongside Nelson Mandela, dies in South Africa. And we meet the musician turning birdsong into music to help save endangered species. The first the world knew of the latest diplomatic spat between the US and China was when residents in Houston, Texas, reported a fire at the Chinese consulate.
Houston fire was called out here to the consulate just after 8 last night. When they got here, they found someone burning classified documents in the courtyard. The U.S. announcing that it is kicking the consulate out.
KHOU-TV in Houston. The U.S. and China later confirmed that Chinese diplomats had been given just 3 days to leave the consulate, a decision Communist Party officials in Beijing said was completely unjustified.
On July the 21st, the U.S. abruptly told China to close its consulate general in Houston. This political provocation was unilaterally initiated by the U.S. in violation of international law and relevant stipulations of the China-U.S. consular agreement.
We heard more about China's reaction from our correspondent there, Stephen McDonnell.
Beijing is calling this an outrageous act from the U.S., saying that it's already preparing its response. Now, its response has got to be the closure of a US consulate in China. But, you know, it's all moving so quickly. Diplomats in that Houston consulate were given just 3 days to leave. But the timing does seem to indicate that it could have something to do with alleged hacking or something like that.
Stephen McDonnell in Beijing. And the expulsions came just as the US accused Chinese hackers of trying to steal research into COVID-19 vaccines. I heard more about that and the diplomatic fallout from our reporter Riley Carlson.
Right. Well, this is the arrest yesterday of two Chinese men for allegedly spying on companies doing research into COVID-19, into the coronavirus in the United States. The U.S. Justice Department also alleges that this was done at least in part for the benefit of the Chinese state. But that is a claim that China has called slanderous and denies those accusations. We don't know for certain yet if these two things are linked, the arrests and the closure of the consulate. But as Steve mentioned, the timing is certainly interesting, and we're waiting to hear more from the U.S. It says it's about protecting American intellectual property right now, but we're simply waiting to hear more on what their justification is for closing this consulate in Houston.
Yeah, tell us more about the strange scenes we saw there overnight and what the U.S. government has said about it.
Well, it is a really bizarre way for the world to sort of find out about this expulsion, as you mentioned. Calls to a local fire department, people were seen burning things in the courtyard of the consulate, video shown by local news crews shows three or four people around three or four garbage cans inside the courtyard of the consulate burning documents and then later on spraying a hose down on the garbage cans and on something else that looked like it had been burning. The fire department never went in, saying they weren't given access, but also that it never got out of control. And another question is going to be why Houston? There are five other consulates in the United States, along with the embassy in Washington, D.C. The consulate consular official's website actually says that this has been open since 1979, which is the same year that diplomatic relations were established between the U.S. and China. So they'll be looking at that as well. But this idea of intellectual property and cybersecurity is something that the U.S. government and specifically the Trump administration has been very vocal about clamping down on for the past couple of years. But there are also other issues between these two countries as well, not just the coronavirus pandemic. There's also disputes over the new national security laws in Hong Kong. And so that will also be a part of what kind of retaliation comes from China. Will they close a consulate in Hong Kong, or potentially even there's reports they may choose to close the consulate in Wuhan, which would be a big deal.
Riley Carlson talking to me shortly before we recorded this podcast. UN agencies are warning that levels of food insecurity in Yemen are on the rise, partly due to the coronavirus pandemic. The World Food Programme and UNICEF say the number of people going hungry in parts of southern Yemen will increase from 2 million at the start of the year to more than 3 million. Sebastian Usher reports.
Hanging by a thread is how the WFP's top official in Yemen describes the situation there. Laurent Bouquera says that unless action is taken now, the consequences will be devastating. Alarm over the situation in Yemen is nothing new, but this latest report says a combination of factors is causing a perfect storm for a sharp rise in food insecurity. These include long-running problems such as the war and the collapsed economy, but newer threats too, floods, desert locusts and coronavirus.
Sebastian Usher. The far-right conspiracy theory QAnon claims that the world is run by a cabal of Satan-worshipping paedophiles who are plotting to overthrow President Trump. It even has support among some Republican Party hopefuls for November's election. But now Twitter says it will ban thousands of accounts linked to QAnon. I heard more from our cybersecurity correspondent, Joe Tidy.
Well, it all started on the pretty nasty corner of the internet called 4chan, which is a largely unregulated message board. And in 2017, a mysterious poster called Q started posting information that he was part of the government and he was deep inside the US government, and that he had information that led to a giant conspiracy, a rabbit hole of different conspiracies all linked together, basically saying that there is a deep state at work trying to free the world of a paedophile ring which runs the entire high society in America. Since then, every time this person Q has posted something, people have read into what it means, and they're often incoherent and rambling and don't mean very much, but people have put their own meanings onto it, and it's led to some really serious offline real world incidents. For example, there was one conspiracy theory that led to a pizza restaurant in America being at the center of a Democratic Party paedophile ring, and there was a shooting there. And we have seen QAnon in recent weeks and months become far more vocal on social media. Twitter said it's got really bad, particularly attacking victims, individual people who maybe speak out against the QAnon conspiracy theories. And we've had also recently that there was this huge conspiracy theory that went very viral about the furniture maker Wayfair, because their prices had a glitch and they were charging, you know, tens of thousands for bits of furniture. There was the theory that actually they weren't selling furniture, they were selling little children who were being child trafficked. They pointed to the fact that some of the missing children in various parts around the world were named. For example, Dylan, a missing child in somewhere in America, one of the bits of furniture is called Dylan. And that apparently led them to believe that this was happening at a major furniture retailer.
Yeah, I mean, there are lots of conspiracy theories online. Why is Twitter acting against this one, and why now?
Well, they say the activity has got particularly feverish and febrile in the last few months. They've pointed to attacks on people who have been criticizing the movement. And now they say that they have isolated 7,000 different Twitter accounts that are perpetuating the conspiracy theories and spreading them around the platform. And they're saying that as well as those 7,000 accounts they're taking down, it will affect 150,000 other accounts, because they're going to reduce the virality of posts from those accounts. And they're going to make sure that whenever anyone searches the platform for QAnon material or QAnon conspiracy theories, they're not served with any results, which that in itself will be huge. Because, of course, when people are looking for the latest theory or the latest information on a particular rabbit hole they want to go down, they often turn to social media and they turn to the search bar. And if that is stopping you from finding that information, that will have real life effects.
Our cyber security correspondent, Joe Tidy. Animal rights campaigners are asking the South Korean president to save the country's caged moon bears. More than 400 of them are in captivity on farms, waiting to be killed for their body parts for use in traditional medicine. A warning that you may find this report from our correspondent Laura Bicker upsetting.
The first thing you hear are the sharp claws against the metal cage, and then you see a nose appearing from between the bars. The other thing is the overwhelming smell of bear dung. Over 120 moon bears are crammed in filthy cages on this farm just a few hours south of Seoul. Some are missing limbs and fur. All are just waiting to die.
This one?
Yeah.
Where's the youngest bear?
The farmer has agreed to talk to us.
He tells me which bears he got as cubs.
I started to farm these bears to sell the biles. Back in the days, the biles used to sell well, but now no one wants to buy it. People relied on the bile for medicine. But now that the economy has grown and dietary supplements are easily available, people aren't seeking out these raw animal medicine.
It is legal to kill bears for their bile in South Korea, as long as the bear is over 10 years old. The fluid is used for a number of health problems, from hangovers to heart disease. But demand has collapsed and farmers have no funds. These bears are fed on leftover donuts from the Krispy Kreme factory. We've come with animal welfare officers. It's their first trip to the farm.
This farm has the most bears out of any farms in Korea, so we anticipated it would be in poor condition, but it's actually a lot worse than what we expected.
Bear bile was once so sought after that Korea's native bears were captured and killed to near extinction. But dozens have now been reintroduced to the wild over the last 20 years. That sound you hear is a tracker on a bear moving around the vast mountains of Jirisan National Park. Rangers and researchers now keep track of 69 wild bears. We're told the signal is almost full, which means there should be a moon bear quite close by, so that's why I'm keeping quite quiet. We're right next to a honey farm, so it may be true that bears do indeed like honey. These bears in Jirisan are lucky. It's not possible to rewild the over 400 farmed bears in this country. The hope is that one day these beautiful creatures will have a future beyond their rusty cages.
Our South Korea correspondent Laura Bicker. The city of Portland in the US state of Oregon has seen nightly demonstrations since the killing of George Floyd by police in Minneapolis in May. Among the protesters is a group of mothers shielding young demonstrators from what they say are the heavy-handed tactics being used by the police. Beverly Barnum is one of the mums. She spoke to Claire McDonald from a demonstration.
It's absolutely magical. A dozen moms are carrying these yellow peace signs filled with sunflowers. We have moms 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, and 70 years old. This is what the movement is about. It's moms unifying together, no matter the demographic, no matter their skin color, to protect a protester's right to protest human rights violations from both the Portland Police Department and the federal agents that are here. I don't even know what to call them.
Tell us why you started this movement. You saw something, didn't you, that didn't sit right with you?
Absolutely. It's now a viral video of two federal officers apprehending a protester and putting him in an unmarked vehicle And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw it. I was very confused. Did some Googling and realized that, yes, federal officers were here and they were doing some serious bodily damage, shooting people in the head, throwing tear gas at people and spraying them with, they're called beanbag rounds. And by the way, they hurt. You think of a beanbag and you think of a barbecue. That is not it. They come out of these massive black guns and they hurt.
Have you been hit by one?
Yes. And I've been tear gassed. Anything that the protesters have had to deal with, us mothers have also had to deal with, even though we are peaceful, nonviolent.
Okay, so from inside one of these demonstrations then, was any of this justified from your point of view? Because we hear obviously from President Trump saying, no, we need to get on top of this. It's lawless. What is it like on the inside?
We are here to prove him a liar and a coward, and we're not going to stop. The cameras are finally rolling. They're showing the truth. Moms are not throwing bricks. We're not throwing water bottles or shoes. We're standing united, arm in arm, yelling, please leave our kids alone.
And you stand there and you have signs, and initially you wore all white and bike helmets as well. Was this sending a particular message, or was it just for your own protection?
Honestly, the white really was just so that you could see the difference between a protester dressed in black and a white wall. I wanted it to be so visible that the media and Trump couldn't spin it. He couldn't say that moms were radicalized and throwing things. I wanted it to be plain, just super clear that no, we were not throwing anything. We were that wall, that unified wall.
Beverly Barnum talking to Claire McDonnell at a demonstration. And still to come in this edition.
What a man can do, I as a woman, I can do it better. I encourage all my fellow women to work also, because we can also make it. We can also do it and even do it better.
We hear from a member of Team Lioness, the Kenyan women game wardens, challenging traditional ideas. Britain's main opposition Labour Party has agreed to pay substantial damages to a group of former employees who'd criticised the party's handling of complaints about anti-Semitism. The journalist who made an investigative BBC programme in which the whistleblowers appeared has also been paid damages. Here's our assistant political editor, Norman Smith.
The Labour Party has publicly apologised for defaming some of its former party staff who raised the alarm about anti-Semitism. Under Keir Starmer, the party has offered substantial payments to them in compensation, a complete about-turn, which, of course, is hugely significant, as it just underlines Sir Keir Starmer's determination to put an end to this swirling cesspit of anti-Semitism that has dogged the Labour Party for years.
Norman Smith. Andrew Mlangeni, the last surviving anti-apartheid activist convicted with Nelson Mandela at South Africa's infamous Rivonia trial, has died at the age of 95. In 2018, to commemorate what would have been Nelson Mandela's 100th birthday, he read out the poem Invictus by William Ernest Henley, which was used by the prisoners on Robben Island to keep up their spirits.
Beyond this place of wrath and tears, but looms the horror of shade, and near the menace of the years finds and shall find me unafraid. It matters not how straight the gate, how charged with punishments the scroll, I am master of my fate. I'm the captain of my soul.
Andrew Mlangeni reading Invictus for the BBC. Our Southern Africa reporter Pumza Filani has this assessment of his legacy.
Andrew Mlangeni was a man of principle, a quiet authority whose humility won over the hearts of many South Africans. He spent 26 years in prison alongside Nelson Mandela. He described himself as a backroom boy, never one to want political fame, but instead working behind the scenes in helping to carve a new South Africa at the end of white minority rule. He buried every last one of his fellow Rivonia trialists and friends. His passing marks the end of an era, the last of a generation of indomitable struggle stalwarts. Mr. Mlangeni believed in the rights of black people, that their lives matter, but he believed in unity too. He did not want his jailers to suffer the same fate he did. Like Mandela, he believed that in order for the majority of black South Africans to be free, people like him would need to advocate for peace instead of revenge.
Pumza Philani on Andrew Mlangeni, who's died at the age of 95. Australia has seen a record increase in new cases of coronavirus. It comes as face coverings are made compulsory in the country's second biggest city, Melbourne. Phil Mercer is following the story.
Well, we've just had latest figures from the Australian government, and in the last 24 hours, Australia as a whole has recorded more than 500 new COVID-19 cases. That is the highest daily increase since the pandemic began, and it comes just a few hours before the entire 5 million people will be forced to wear masks outside. Now, the city of Melbourne and a large area to the north are currently under lockdown. That means people can only leave their homes for essential business. When they do, they will have to wear masks. And due to an apparent shortage of proper surgical masks, official advice is being given to residents about how to make their own. And also bandanas, scarves and handkerchiefs will also do the job. But safe to say, Australia's coronavirus emergency is intensifying.
Phil Mercer in Sydney. At the height of the pandemic in Kenya, a group of female park rangers called Team Lioness stayed in the bush protecting wildlife from poaching. Only now have they been able to see their families as Kenya eases its four-month lockdown. One of the rangers, Purity Lakara, told Claire McDonald about the risks of the job, specifically what to do when confronted by a buffalo.
You either lie down flat on the ground or you climb up to the tall tree.
Have you had to do that?
Yes, sure.
What did you do? Did you lie down or did you climb the tree?
I had to lie down flat and quietly without shaking.
How does that prevent them from attacking you?
Because the horns are curved. So if it tries to pick you from the ground, it is also hard to eat because it will not make it. So we have to lie flat and you don't shake, because if you shake, it gets a chance to pick you up and throw you.
How long did you lie on the ground for?
You lay to the ground until it moves away. If it will not move, you lie there until a rescue team came and rescue you.
And what happened with you? How did that story end?
We were a team of seven. We were seven. So there are some friends who climb up to the tree and they have the flash and the buffalo ran away. So they save us.
You are the first generation, the first woman in your family to work outside of the home in, as we've already heard, a physically demanding, very risky job. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel well to be the first woman working on a physical demanding job like this. Because, you know, in my community, they believe that this physical demanding job, it's only based on men. Because they believe that men are strong, they can do it, they can run fast. So they say all these hard jobs belong to men. But for me, I feel proud because I can do what men they can do. I also feel more proud because I see gender equality. At least now, what a man can do, I as a woman, I can do it better.
Purity, what do you hope your legacy will be?
I encourage my fellow women to wake up and do the same what I'm doing. You sit there back at home waiting for a man to work for you. No, I encourage all my fellow women to work also, because we can also make it. We can also do it and even do it better.
Purity Lakara talking to Claire McDonald from Kenya. Finally, and staying with wildlife, a London-based record producer who goes by the name of El Buho has released the second instalment of an album featuring the sound of endangered birds in the Caribbean, Mexico and Central America. The aim is to support efforts to reverse the decline in endangered species. Michael Rossi takes up the story.
That incredibly tuneful bird song is from the black catbird, native to the Caribbean. It's one of the world's most endangered bird species, with only an estimated 20 to 50,000 left. The song of that bird has inspired this. That's music by the Garifuna Collective from the Caribbean nation of Belize, based entirely around the song of the black catbird. The Collective are one of 10 musical groups from the region who were asked to create music using sound samples of endangered birdsong from their homeland. The new album is the brainchild of music producer Robin Perkins.
Birdsong has always been a part of my life, I suppose. My real name is Robin, which obviously is a bird. My producer name is El Búho, which is the owl in Spanish. Birds were always part of my life, and so when you start to make music, it's a reflection of your history, your personality, your story, and for me, birds and nature is always a part of that, and I wanted to explore how we could bring together music and these elements. You know, birds for me are the closest we have to kind of musical animals.
For the album project, music producer Robin Perkins made a short list of endangered birds.
I think it's important to underline that this is emblematic. You know, these 10 species are not the 10 most endangered, they're not the 10 most melodic. They represent a bigger story, a bigger picture about threatened birds and endangered species today.
Al Ovando is producer and rhythm guitarist of the Garifuna Collective.
When Robin asked me if I would be interested, well, I actually reached out to him because Belize was not included in the birding project for Central America, Mexico, and the Caribbean. Well, I first asked him why, because from my end, protecting wildlife and nature here in Belize is big.
One of the striking things about this is the way that the musicians strongly identified with the birds they chose to represent in music. Al was already a keen bird watcher, but the work on this album has encouraged not only him, but others in Belize.
Everybody was like excited about it in Belize, and to me, that's like a big thing. And so that actually sparked the label started talking about making an EP for a new set of birds. Because of the whole pandemic, I was anxious to go out and find other birds, but I actually stuck with the backyard birds I have at home. All this came because of the immediate appreciation from our own people. I said, well, this is a good thing, you know, and the whole idea of people being conscious of conservation, and if we could be a part of it, that would be really nice.
And that report by Michael Rossi. That is all from us for now. There'll be an updated version of the Global News podcast later. I'm Oliver Conway. Until next time, goodbye.
I could just hear the metal being crushed and glass shattering, and it was so, so violent.
The Outlook podcast from the BBC World Service brings you tales of ordinary people with extraordinary stories.
An average person would take around a month to shed their skin, and I shed mine in a day.
When I got to the age of 9 years old, I decided, you know what, I had enough, so I make a run for the streets.
They lined us up against the wall with their machine guns, and they said, we're going to splatter your blood against this wall like paint.
And then suddenly, I was like, wait a minute, I can't live like this for the rest of my life.
I thought, you know what? No one can tell me I'm not allowed to talk about this.
I've been dying for 19 years. For me, it was worth the shot.
There was nothing that was going to stop me.
The Outlook podcast.
If you live every day like it's your last day, you take as much as you can for it. You don't care about the consequences.
Just search for BBC Outlook, wherever you get your podcasts.